Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Ghost Train Murders, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Carnival Beckons. I arrived at the carnival on a cold October night, the kind of night where the wind howled like a restless spirit, and the full moon hung low, casting an eerie glow over the patchy fields. From a distance, the carnival looked like a world of wonder, a beacon of color and sound in the middle of nowhere. But as I got closer, the glamour melted away, leaving something far darker beneath the surface. My name is Elliot Kane. I've made a career out of poking into places where others wouldn't dare tread. Murders, cults, disappearances, you name it. But this was something else entirely. The traveling carnival had been the subject of whispered rumors for years. A place where people came for thrills and sometimes never left. I wasn't here for a good time. I was here to uncover the truth, and from the moment I stepped onto the muddy grounds, I knew I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. The first thing that hit me was the smell. A mixture of popcorn, stale beer, and something metallic like blood. I brushed it off, chalking it up to nerves. The lights flickered unnaturally, casting long, jagged shadows that seemed to move even when no one was around. Laughter echoed in the distance, sharp and distorted, as if the air itself was twisting the sound. Every instinct in my body screamed at me to leave, but I'd never been one to back down. The workers looked as if they'd been plucked from a nightmare. A man with a face full of scars ran the ring toss. His smile didn't reach his eyes. A woman juggling flaming torches moved with unsettling precision, her painted-on grin almost a sneer. And then there was the fortune-teller, Margot Lynn. She sat in her dimly lit tent, her dark eyes boring into mine as I passed, as if she already knew why I was here. Her voice followed me like a whisper in the wind. "You'll regret this." I stopped in my tracks but didn't turn around. The words weren't loud, but they pierced me like a dagger. I shook it off and kept walking, trying to focus on my goal. My investigation started with the main attraction, the ghost train. People called it the heart of the carnival, but the stories surrounding it were anything but whimsical. Visitors spoke of lifelike horror scenes inside, of feeling watched even when they were alone. Some even claimed to hear screams that weren't part of the show. The line was surprisingly short for such a famous ride. As I approached, the train's entrance loomed like the gaping maw of some monstrous creature. The cars were painted to look like skeletal remains, the headlights glowing an unnatural red. A bored-looking teenager took my ticket, barely glancing up. "Good luck," he muttered under his breath. I stepped inside, and the world shifted. The air was damp and cold, the smell of decay overpowering. The first scene came into view. An abandoned house with flickering lights and blood splattered on the walls. Figures moved in the shadows, their grotesque features illuminated only briefly by the strobe effects. It was disturbingly realistic. Too realistic. I leaned closer to inspect one of the mannequins and froze. Its eyes. They weren't glass or plastic, they were human. Bloodshot and unblinking. A loud clanking sound jolted me, and the train moved forward with a sudden lurch. My heart pounded in my chest as the scenes became more graphic. A woman lying on a kitchen floor, her throat slit from ear to ear. A man hanging from the rafters, his eyes bulging, tongue swollen. I reached out to touch the scene, my fingers trembling, and felt the sticky warmth of fresh blood. I wasn't imagining it. This wasn't fake. The train screeched to a halt, plunging me into darkness. Panic set in. My breathing grew rapid, my hands clammy. Then came the sound, a low, guttural moan that sent shivers down my spine. It was coming from behind me. I turned slowly, every muscle in my body screaming to run. In the faint glow of a single flickering bulb, I saw a figure dragging itself toward me. Its limbs were twisted unnaturally, its face contorted in a mask of agony. "Help me," it croaked, blood dripping from its mouth. I stumbled backward, tripping over the edge of the car. The figure lunged, its hand grazing my ankle, and I kicked out instinctively, my foot connecting with something solid. The figure collapsed with a sickening crunch, but before I could catch my breath, the train jolted forward again, faster this time. The scenes blurred past, each one more horrific than the last. People torn apart, their screams echoing in the confined space. I couldn't tell what was real and what wasn't anymore. Finally, the train came to a stop at the exit. I stumbled out, gasping for air, my clothes damp with sweat, and something else. Blood? I looked around, but no one seemed to notice. The carnival went on as if nothing had happened. I turned back toward the train, and that's when I saw it, a pair of glowing red eyes staring at me from the last car. They blinked once, then disappeared. As I stood there, trying to make sense of what I'd just experienced, a scream tore through the night. It was coming from the train. I rushed back, pushing past the line of curious onlookers, and froze at the sight. A body dangled from the side of the car, its throat slashed, blood pooling on the ground below. The same bored teenager who had taken my ticket now lay lifeless, his face twisted in terror. The carnival workers moved quickly, ushering people away, their expressions cold and rehearsed. I locked eyes with Josephine Drake for the first time. Her face was a mask of calm, but her eyes betrayed something else. Fear? Guilt? I couldn't tell. "You shouldn't have come here," she said, her voice low but firm. Before I could respond, the lights of the carnival flickered, and the air grew heavy. I knew then that I wasn't dealing with an ordinary murder. This was something far darker, and I was already in too deep. Chapter 2: Shadows of the Past. The next morning, I woke with a pounding headache, my mind replaying the grotesque images from the ghost train. Every scream, every gory detail, every second of that ride seemed etched into my memory like a scar. I hadn't slept much. The smell of blood, damp and metallic, still lingered in my nostrils as if it had seeped into my skin. I couldn't shake the feeling that the carnival was watching me, even now in the quiet stillness of my motel room. The cheap floral wallpaper and buzzing neon sign outside did little to provide comfort. My investigation wasn't just starting, it was devouring me piece by piece. I had questions, too many, and not a single answer. Who was behind the murders? What was the connection to the ghost train? And why did Josephine Drake's cold, calculating eyes haunt me more than the corpse I'd seen dangling from that train car? I pushed myself out of bed, ignoring the wave of nausea that hit me. If I was going to uncover the truth, I needed to act fast. People who asked too many questions about the carnival didn't seem to stick around for long. The carnival grounds looked different during the day. The garish lights were gone, replaced by a dreary overcast sky that made everything appear even more sinister. The rides sat lifeless, their chipped paint and rusted metal exposed under the harsh daylight. The carnival workers moved like ghosts, their eyes avoiding mine as I walked past. They knew something, I could feel it, but getting them to talk would be another matter entirely. My first stop was the fortune teller Margot Lynn. Her tent was tucked away near the edge of the carnival, its dark fabric swaying in the cold breeze. A wooden sign hung above the entrance, the paint peeling to reveal faded letters. "Margot sees all." I hesitated for a moment before stepping inside. The air inside the tent was heavy with the smell of incense, almost chokingly sweet. Margot sat behind a small table, her hands resting on a crystal ball that seemed to pulse with an unnatural light. Her dark eyes met mine, and for a moment, I felt as if she could see right through me. "You survived the night," she said, her voice soft but laced with something I couldn't quite place. "Amusement? Pity. That's more than most can say." I didn't respond immediately. Instead, I sat down across from her, the chair creaking under my weight. "You knew," I said finally. "You knew something was going to happen." Margot tilted her head, her lips curling into a faint smile. "I know many things, Mr. Kane, but knowing and stopping are two very different things." I leaned forward, lowering my voice. "The train. The murders. What's the connection?" Her expression darkened, and for a moment, I thought she wouldn't answer. But then she leaned closer, her voice dropping to a whisper. "The train is cursed, bound by blood and death. It shows the truth, Elliot. The truth people don't want to see." "What truth?" I pressed. She didn't answer. Instead, she reached into her pocket and pulled out a small, folded piece of paper, sliding it across the table to me. "Go here," she said. "You'll find your answers." I unfolded the paper to reveal an address scrawled in shaky handwriting. Before I could ask any more questions, she stood and walked to the back of the tent, disappearing behind a curtain. The conversation was over. The address led me to the outskirts of town, to a crumbling farmhouse surrounded by overgrown weeds and rusted barbed wire. The place looked abandoned, but the eerie silence told me otherwise. I parked my car and approached cautiously, my hand instinctively resting on the small knife I kept in my jacket pocket. The front door was ajar, creaking softly in the wind. Inside, the air was thick with dust and decay. Broken furniture and shattered glass littered the floor, and the faint smell of something rotting made my stomach turn. I moved deeper into the house, my footsteps echoing in the emptiness. That's when I saw it, a photograph lying on the floor, half buried under a pile of rubble. I picked it up, brushing off the dirt to reveal a faded image of a group of people standing in front of what looked like the ghost train. At the center of the group was a younger Josephine Drake, her smile wide and unnervingly fake. The others in the photo were unfamiliar, except for one face that made my blood run cold. It was the boy from the ticket booth, the one who'd been murdered last night. A sudden noise behind me made me spin around, my heart pounding. A man stood in the doorway, his face obscured by shadows. He was holding a crowbar, and his knuckles were white from gripping it so tightly. "You shouldn't be here," he growled, his voice low and threatening. I backed away slowly, my mind racing. "I'm just looking for answers," I said, trying to keep my voice steady. The man stepped closer, the dim light revealing his face. His eyes were wild, his face gaunt and scarred. "Answers won't save you," he spat. "The train takes what it wants." Before I could react, he lunged at me. I barely managed to dodge the swing of the crowbar, the metal whistling past my head. I stumbled backward, crashing into a broken table. The man came at me again, his movements erratic but deadly. I grabbed a shard of glass from the floor and thrust it upward as he lunged, the glass sinking into his shoulder with a sickening crunch. He howled in pain, dropping the crowbar and falling to his knees. I didn't wait for him to recover. I grabbed the photograph and ran, my heart pounding as I sprinted back to my car. That night, I sat in my motel room, staring at the photograph. My mind was a whirlwind of questions and fear. Who were the people in the photo? What was their connection to the train? And why did Josephine look so triumphant? I didn't have answers, but one thing was clear. The train wasn't just a carnival ride. It was a monument to something far darker, something steeped in blood and death. And I was only just beginning to uncover its secrets. Chapter 3: Whispers in the Dark. By the time the sun sank below the horizon, I'd convinced myself that what I'd experienced was only the surface of something far worse. The farmhouse encounter had shaken me, but the photograph burned a deeper hole in my mind. A younger Josephine Drake, surrounded by faces both familiar and strange, standing proudly before the ghost train. It wasn't just a carnival ride. It was a monument, a relic of something ancient and horrifying. The more I stared at the photograph, the more questions it raised. Why was the boy from the ticket booth in it, decades younger than he should have been? And who were the others, with their expressions ranging from uneasy to outright terrified? The answers weren't going to reveal themselves in the dim motel room, so I did the only thing I knew how. I went back to the carnival. The night air was colder than before, the kind of cold that bites through your skin and settles deep in your bones. The carnival was alive again, its garish lights flickering against the inky sky. The screams from the rides and laughter of the crowd felt distorted, unnatural, as if the entire place was a living, breathing entity that thrived on fear. I didn't go straight to the ghost train this time. Instead, I wandered, blending into the crowd, listening. Every corner of the carnival seemed to hold a secret. The workers spoke in hushed tones, casting glances over their shoulders. The laughter of the visitors felt forced, strained. Even the children seemed subdued, their wide eyes darting nervously to the shadows between the attractions. I found myself drawn to the fortune teller's tent again. Margot Lynn was sitting in the same spot, her hands resting on the crystal ball. But this time, she didn't smile when she saw me. Her expression was grim, her eyes heavy with something that looked like guilt. "You came back," she said flatly. "I'm not leaving until I get answers," I replied, pulling the photograph from my pocket and placing it on the table between us. "What is this? Who are these people?" Margot's eyes flicked to the photograph, and for the first time, I saw a crack in her composure. She hesitated, her hands trembling as she picked it up. This is where it started," she whispered, her voice barely audible. "The train. It wasn't always a ride." I leaned in, my heart pounding. "What do you mean?" She placed the photograph back on the table, her eyes meeting mine. "The train was something else once. A vessel. It carried prisoners, condemned men and women, on their final journey. They called it the Black Line." I felt a chill run down my spine. "Condemned for what?" "Everything," she said. "Murder, theft, betrayal. The train didn't discriminate. But the worst part wasn't the journey. It was the end. The people who stepped off that train never came back. They vanished, their screams echoing into the void. I struggled to process what she was saying. And Josephine? What's her connection to this? Margot hesitated, her gaze dropping to the table. She's tied to it, bound by blood. Her family, they own the Black Line. It's been in her bloodline for generations. The pieces were falling into place, but they painted a picture too horrific to believe. The murders, I said slowly. They're connected to the train, aren't they? Margot nodded. The train doesn't just show murder, Elliot. It demands it. It feeds on fear, on pain. The scenes inside, they're not just recreations. They're echoes. Echoes of what? Her voice dropped to a whisper. Of real deaths. Deaths that happen here, at the carnival. I left the tent feeling more confused and unsettled than ever. If Margot was telling the truth, then the train wasn't just a cursed ride. It was a predator, and the carnival was its hunting ground. The thought made my stomach churn, but I couldn't walk away now. I needed proof. The ghost train loomed ahead, its skeletal facade somehow more menacing in the dim light. I approached cautiously, my eyes scanning the surrounding area. The crowd was thinner tonight, the air heavy with an unspoken tension. I slipped past the ticket booth and found myself standing at the entrance once again. This time, I didn't wait for the train to start moving. I stepped inside and began walking through the ride on foot. The scenes were just as horrifying as before, but now, I looked closer. The blood on the walls. The bodies. The screams. It wasn't just a show, it was a crime scene. I reached the third scene. A man slumped against a bar, his chest riddled with bullet holes. The detail was nauseating. The torn fabric of his shirt, the pooling blood, the glazed look in his eyes. I crouched down and touched the blood. It was still warm. A sound behind me made me freeze. Footsteps. Slow, deliberate, echoing through the darkness. I turned, my heart racing, but there was no one there. Who's there? I called out, my voice shaky. No answer. Just the sound of breathing. Heavy, ragged, and close. Too close. I backed away, my hand gripping the small knife in my pocket. The footsteps grew louder, closer, until they were right behind me. I spun around, knife raised, and came face to face with nothing. The space was empty, but the air felt charged, electric. And then I saw it, movement in the shadows. A figure barely visible watching me. Its eyes glowed red, just like the ones I'd seen the night before. Leave, it rasped, the word barely more than a growl. I didn't need to be told twice. I turned and ran, my footsteps pounding against the metal floor. The scenes blurred past me, each one more grotesque than the last. A woman hanging from a noose, her body swaying gently. A child clutching a bloodied teddy bear, his eyes hollow. A man screaming as flames consumed him. I burst out of the exit, gasping for air. The carnival was almost deserted now, the workers packing up for the night. But as I stumbled away from the ghost train, I noticed something that made my blood run cold. The crowd wasn't gone. They were lying on the ground, motionless. Blood pooled around their bodies, their faces frozen in terror. I fell to my knees, my stomach churning as I tried to comprehend what I was seeing. Dozens of people, slaughtered in the blink of an eye. And standing in the center of the carnage was Josephine Drake, her hands slick with blood, her eyes glowing faintly in the darkness. This is what happens, she said, her voice calm and devoid of emotion. This is what the train demands. Chapter 4, The Fortune Teller's Prophecy. The blood-soaked image of Josephine Drake, standing amidst a sea of lifeless bodies, haunted me long after I fled the carnival that night. Her cold, unflinching expression replayed in my mind, a grim reminder that I was delving into something far beyond the natural world. Sleep was impossible, not just because of the horrors I'd seen, but because every creak, every shadow in my motel room felt alive, watching, waiting. By morning, I was more determined than ever to uncover the truth. If what Margot Lynn had told me was true, that the ghost train was a predator, feeding on fear and death, then the carnival wasn't just a crime scene. It was a hunting ground, and Josephine Drake was its keeper. But the deeper I dug, the more dangerous my search became. I returned to the carnival during the daylight hours, hoping the diminished crowds and lack of spectacle would make it easier to investigate. The grounds were eerily silent, the rides motionless, their chipped paint and rusted metal exposed under the harsh sun. The workers avoided my gaze, moving like shadows, their faces hollow. It was as if the murders from the previous night hadn't happened, like the carnival had swallowed the bodies and erased the evidence. I headed straight for Margot Lynn's tent. Her cryptic warnings and half-truths had done little to ease my confusion, but I needed answers, no matter how elusive or dangerous they might be. Pushing aside the heavy fabric that served as a door, I stepped inside. She was waiting for me, seated behind her table as if she'd known I was coming. The crystal ball in front of her seemed to glow faintly, pulsing like a heartbeat. Her expression was unreadable, her dark eyes piercing as they met mine. "You shouldn't have come back," she said, her voice low and steady. "You told me to find the truth," I shot back, my frustration bubbling to the surface. "But all I've found are more bodies. More death. If you know what's happening, you need to tell me everything. Now." She studied me for a long moment, her gaze heavy with something I couldn't quite place. "Guilt? Fear?" Finally, she sighed and leaned forward, her voice barely more than a whisper. "The ghost train isn't just cursed, Elliot. It's alive." I blinked, unsure if I'd heard her correctly. "What do you mean alive?" "It has a will of its own," she continued. "A hunger. It doesn't just show death, it creates it. The scenes inside are echoes of murders it has orchestrated, and those who ride it, they become part of its story." Her words sent a chill down my spine. "And Josephine? What's her role in all this?" "She's the caretaker," Margot said, her voice tinged with sadness. "Her family has been tied to the train for generations. It's her duty to feed it, to ensure its survival. But she's lost control. The train has grown more powerful, more violent. It's no longer content with small sacrifices." I felt a surge of anger. "And you've just stood by and let this happen? Let people die?" She met my gaze, her eyes hard. "Do you think I have a choice?" "No one does. The train chooses its victims, Elliot. Even you." Her words hung in the air like a death sentence. I wanted to argue, to tell her she was wrong, but deep down, I knew she wasn't. The train had already marked me the moment I stepped inside it. I spent the rest of the day combing through what little information I could find about the carnival's history. Old newspaper clippings, faded photographs, and whispered rumors painted a grim picture. The ghost train had been added to the carnival nearly a century ago, its origins shrouded in mystery. Every town it visited left a trail of disappearances and unexplained deaths, but no one had ever connected the dots, until now. By the time night fell, I had pieced together enough to confront Josephine directly. Armed with the photograph from the farmhouse and the fragmented knowledge I'd gathered, I made my way back to the carnival. The air was heavy with anticipation, as if the very ground beneath my feet was waiting for the carnage to begin. I found Josephine near the ghost train, her sharp features illuminated by the flickering lights of the ride. She looked almost regal, her posture stiff and her eyes cold. She didn't flinch as I approached, her gaze locking onto mine with unnerving intensity. "You're persistent," she said, her tone void of emotion. "That's a dangerous trait in a place like this." I didn't waste time with pleasantries. I pulled the photograph from my pocket and held it up. "What is this? What does it mean?" Her expression didn't change, but I saw a flicker of something, recognition perhaps, in her eyes. "Where did you get that?" "It doesn't matter," I said. "What matters is that I know what this place is. I know what the train is. And I know you've been feeding it." She laughed then, a bitter, hollow sound. "You think you've uncovered some great secret? You don't know the half of it, Elliot." "Then tell me," I demanded. "If you're not the monster everyone thinks you are, prove it. Help me stop this." Her laughter faded, replaced by a look of profound sadness. "You can't stop it," she said. "The train isn't just a machine. It's a force of nature. It's older than you can imagine, and its hunger can't be sated. I've tried to contain it, to control it, but it's too late. The train is awake, and it won't stop until it's had its fill." I took a step closer, my anger boiling over. "So you just let it happen? Let innocent people die?" She met my gaze, unflinching. "You think I don't carry the weight of every life it's taken? You think I don't feel their screams in my bones? But fighting it is like fighting the tide. You can't win." Before I could respond, a blood-curdling scream tore through the night. I turned to see a crowd gathered near the Ferris wheel, their faces pale with terror. The ghost train's lights flickered wildly, casting eerie shadows across the carnival. "It's starting," Josephine said quietly. I ran toward the Ferris wheel, pushing through the panicked crowd. The scene that greeted me was worse than anything I'd imagined. A man's body was impaled on one of the ride's metal beams, his blood dripping onto the ground below. His face was frozen in an expression of pure terror, his lifeless eyes staring into the void. And then the train's whistle sounded, a low, mournful wail that seemed to shake the very earth. The crowd scattered, their screams blending with the train's haunting call. I turned back to Josephine, who stood motionless, her expression unreadable. "This is just the beginning," she said. Chapter 5, The Truth Beneath the Tracks. The whistle from the ghost train was unlike anything I had ever heard. It wasn't the sharp, mechanical sound of a normal train. It was mournful, almost human, as though the train itself were alive and wailing. The air grew heavier with each passing second, and the screams of the carnival goers faded into the background as that chilling whistle drowned out everything else. I felt the ground tremble beneath my feet as the train jolted to life, its skeletal cars rumbling forward with a screech of metal on metal. It wasn't supposed to move without passengers. Yet here it was, grinding its way along the tracks as if it had a mind of its own. The flickering red lights from its headlights bathed the area in an unholy glow, casting jagged shadows across the carnival. This wasn't just a ride. It was a predator, and it was hunting. I ran after it, weaving through the chaos as people scattered in every direction. The train picked up speed, the screams coming from inside its cars growing louder. It wasn't just the sound effects of the ride anymore. These were real, raw, and agonized. The kind that makes your blood run cold and your stomach twist in knots. "Get out of the way," I shouted, shoving past a group of onlookers who stood frozen in horror. Their eyes were locked on the train as it barreled past, its wheels sparking against the tracks. The ghostly figures inside weren't mannequins anymore. They moved, writhing and clawing at the windows, their faces twisted in expressions of unimaginable pain. Josephine's voice rang in my ears as I sprinted after the train. "You can't stop it. The train is awake." The truth hit me like a freight train of its own. The ghost train wasn't just alive, it was aware. It was choosing its victims, pulling them into its web of death and despair. And if I didn't stop it, there wouldn't be anyone left standing by the end of the night. The tracks led away from the carnival and into the surrounding woods, where the trees closed in like skeletal hands. The carnival workers were gone, and the lights of the midway faded behind me, replaced by the suffocating darkness of the forest. The train's whistle echoed through the trees, each blast more ominous than the last. I followed the tracks as best as I could, my flashlight barely piercing the inky blackness. Every step felt like a descent into madness. The forest was alive with unnatural sounds, branches snapping, leaves rustling, and whispers that seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere all at once. And then I saw it. The train had come to a stop in a clearing up ahead, its skeletal cars glowing faintly in the darkness. The red lights of its headlights pulsed like a heartbeat, illuminating the gruesome scene in front of it. Bodies, dozens of them, strewn across the tracks like discarded dolls. Men, women, and children, all lifeless, their faces frozen in expressions of terror. Blood pooled around them, soaking into the ground and staining the leaves. The stench of death was overpowering, and I had to fight the urge to retch. But it wasn't just the bodies that held my attention. It was the figures standing among them. Josephine was there, her hands covered in blood. She stood at the center of the carnage, her face expressionless as she surveyed the scene. Beside her was a man I hadn't seen before, tall and gaunt, his eyes glowing faintly in the dark. He held a staff in one hand, its top adorned with a twisted piece of metal that seemed to shimmer and shift in the faint light. I stayed hidden in the shadows, my heart pounding as I watched them. The man spoke first, his voice low and guttural, like the growl of an animal. "It's almost ready," he said, his eyes fixed on Josephine. "The train is nearly full." Josephine didn't respond right away. When she finally spoke, her voice was flat, devoid of emotion. "This wasn't supposed to happen. It wasn't supposed to take this many." "You don't control it," the man replied. "You never did. The train takes what it wants." Josephine's hands clenched into fists, her calm exterior cracking for just a moment. "This isn't what I wanted." "But it's what you agreed to," the man said, a cruel smile spreading across his face. "Blood for blood, Josephine. That was the deal." I felt a surge of rage and horror as I pieced together the truth. Josephine wasn't just a victim of the train's curse, she was complicit. She had made a deal with whatever force controlled the train, sacrificing innocent lives to keep it sated. And now, the train was out of control, its hunger insatiable. I couldn't stay hidden any longer. Gripping the knife in my pocket, I stepped into the clearing, my flashlight beam cutting through the darkness. Both Josephine and the man turned to face me, their expressions unreadable. "So this is it," I said, my voice shaking but determined. "This is what you've been hiding." Josephine didn't look surprised to see me. If anything, she looked resigned. "You shouldn't be here, Elliot." "Neither should they," I shot back, gesturing to the bodies around us. "How many, Josephine? How many lives have you sacrificed for that thing?" Her jaw tightened, but she didn't answer. The man, however, let out a low chuckle. "You're brave," he said, his glowing eyes narrowing. "Stupid, but brave." I ignored him, focusing on Josephine. "You can stop this. Whatever deal you made, it's not worth this." She shook her head, her expression pained. "You don't understand. The train, it's not something you can stop. It's older than any of us. Older than this world. If I fight it, it'll take more. It'll take everything." "Then let it," I said. "But don't let it take any more innocent people." For a moment, I thought I saw a flicker of humanity in her eyes. But it was gone as quickly as it came. She turned to the man beside her, her voice low and trembling. "Do it." The man raised his staff, and the air around us seemed to ripple. The train's whistle sounded again, louder this time, and the ground beneath us began to shake. The bodies on the tracks twitched and jerked, as if something was pulling at them, dragging them toward the train. I lunged at the man, my knife aimed for his chest. But he moved faster than I expected, his staff slamming into my ribs and sending me sprawling to the ground. Pain shot through my body, but I forced myself to get up, my eyes locked on Josephine. "You can still stop this," I shouted, desperation in my voice. "Don't let it win." She hesitated, her hands trembling. For a moment, I thought she might listen. But then the man grabbed her arm, his voice like a whip. "Do it now, or it'll take you too." Josephine closed her eyes, tears streaming down her face. And then she spoke a single word. "Go!" The train roared to life, its wheels grinding against the tracks as it began to move. The bodies were pulled inside one by one, their screams echoing through the forest. I tried to stop it, tried to grab Josephine, but the force of the train was too strong. It was like fighting a hurricane. And then it was gone, disappearing into the darkness, leaving nothing but silence and the stench of death. Josephine sank to her knees, her face pale and haunted. "It's over," she whispered. But I knew better. This wasn't over. Not by a long shot. Chapter 6, A Ride to Hell. I didn't know how long I sat in that forest clearing after the train disappeared. The blood-soaked ground beneath me felt like it was pulsing, alive with the echoes of the horrors I'd witnessed. Josephine stood nearby, motionless, her eyes fixed on the empty tracks where the ghost train had vanished into the dark. She looked small now, her shoulders hunched under the weight of a lifetime of sins. "It's not over," I said, breaking the silence. My voice sounded hollow, even to me. "The train isn't gone. It's just hiding." Josephine turned to me, her face pale and haunted. "It always comes back," she said softly. "But maybe you've bought us some time." "Time for what?" I snapped, the anger bubbling to the surface. "Time for it to kill more people? To destroy more lives?" She didn't answer. Instead, she walked past me toward the empty tracks, her movements slow and deliberate. She stopped at the edge of the clearing and knelt down, pressing her hands to the bloodied ground. For a moment, I thought she might cry, but when she looked back at me, her expression was steeled with something that looked like resolve. "There's only one way to end this," she said. "We have to destroy it." I let out a bitter laugh, the sound harsh and broken. "You just told me it can't be destroyed." "Not in the way you're thinking," she replied. "But the train isn't just a machine. It's connected to something else. Something deeper. If we can sever that connection." Her voice trailed off, and I realized she wasn't just talking to me. She was talking to herself, piecing the plan together in real time. I wanted to believe her. I wanted to believe there was a way to stop the train for good. But I'd seen what it was capable of. I'd felt its hunger, its malice. And I wasn't sure if anything could stand against it. "How?" I asked finally. "How do we sever the connection?" Josephine hesitated, then pulled a silver chain from around her neck. At the end of the chain was a small, intricately carved key, its surface etched with strange symbols. She held it out to me, her hand trembling. "This," she said. "It's the train's heart. The key to its power. It's what ties it to this world." I stared at the key, the weight of her words sinking in. "And what happens if we destroy it?" Her eyes met mine, and for the first time I saw fear there. "I don't know." The key was cold in my hand as we made our way back to the carnival. The air was heavy with the stench of death and decay, the aftermath of the train's rampage still fresh. The bodies were gone, but the bloodstains remained, dark and accusing under the flickering lights. The workers were nowhere to be seen, and the ride stood silent, their garish colors muted in the dim light. Josephine led me to the ghost train station, where the skeletal cars sat idle on the tracks. It looked almost peaceful now, its grotesque facade stripped of the menace I'd felt before. But I knew better. The train wasn't gone. It was waiting, biding its time. "Do you hear that?" Josephine asked suddenly, her voice barely above a whisper. I listened, straining to catch whatever sound had caught her attention. At first, there was nothing. But then, faint and distant, I heard it, the low, mournful whistle of the train. It sent a shiver down my spine, and I tightened my grip on the key. It's coming back, I said. Josephine nodded. It knows what we're trying to do. Then we don't have much time, I replied. What's the plan? She hesitated, then turned to me, her expression grim. We take the fight to it. We climbed into the first car of the train, the air inside thick and suffocating. The seats were slick with blood, and the walls seemed to pulse with a life of their own. The train jolted to life the moment we stepped inside, the wheels grinding against the tracks as it began to move. The whistle blared, louder than ever, and the lights flickered wildly, casting distorted shadows across the car. Stay close, Josephine said, her voice barely audible over the noise. The closer we get to the engine room, the stronger it will fight back. I didn't need her to tell me twice. The train was already fighting back. The walls seemed to close in around us, the air growing colder with each passing second. The scenes of murder and violence I'd seen before were back, but they were worse now, more vivid and visceral. The victims moved, their screams echoing through the car, their blood splattering the walls and floor. I forced myself to keep moving, my eyes fixed on Josephine's back as she led the way. The second car was even worse. The bodies weren't just mannequins, they were real. I could smell the blood, feel the heat of their dying breaths as we passed. A woman reached out to me, her fingers brushing against my arm. Her eyes were wide with terror, her mouth moving soundlessly as blood poured from her throat. I pulled away, my stomach churning, but her touch lingered like a brand. Don't stop, Josephine said sharply. It's trying to distract you. We pushed forward, car after car, each one more horrific than the last. The train was alive, its walls throbbing like a heartbeat, its windows fogging with condensation that seemed to spell out words I couldn't understand. The air grew heavier, the temperature dropping until I could see my breath in front of me. And then we reached the engine room. The door to the engine room was massive, made of blackened steel and covered in strange, glowing symbols. The key in my hand felt impossibly heavy as I stepped forward, the weight of what I was about to do pressing down on me. Are you ready? Josephine asked. I nodded, even though I wasn't sure. I didn't have a choice. I inserted the key into the lock and turned it. The door creaked open, revealing the heart of the train. The engine room was a cavernous space, filled with gears and pipes that hissed and groaned like living things. At the center was a massive furnace, its flames burning an unnatural shade of blue. Shadows danced across the walls, taking on grotesque shapes that seemed to mock me. And standing before the furnace was the man from before, the one with the glowing eyes. He smiled when he saw us, his teeth sharp and jagged. You've come far, he said, his voice echoing in the chamber. But this is where your journey ends. Josephine stepped forward, her eyes blazing with determination. No, she said. This is where it ends for you. The fight was brutal and chaotic. The man moved with inhuman speed, his staff striking out like a serpent. But Josephine was faster, her movements precise and deadly. She drove him back toward the furnace, her strikes relentless. Elliot, she shouted. The key. I didn't hesitate. I ran to the furnace, the key in my hand burning like fire. The man lunged for me, but Josephine intercepted him, driving her knife into his chest. He howled in pain, his glowing eyes dimming, but he didn't fall. Hurry, she screamed. I threw the key into the furnace, the flames roaring to life as it disappeared into the blue fire. The room shook violently, the walls cracking and crumbling around us. The man let out one final, guttural scream before collapsing, his body consumed by the flames. The train let out one last whistle, a sound of pure agony, before everything went dark. When I woke, I was lying on the ground outside the carnival. The sun was rising, its light washing over the empty rides and deserted midway. The ghost train was gone, the tracks it had once run on now overgrown with weeds. Josephine was gone too, her body nowhere to be found. But I knew she was gone for good. Her sacrifice had ensured that. The train was destroyed, its connection to this world severed. But as I walked away from the carnival, I couldn't shake the feeling that it wasn't over. The train was gone, but its memory lingered, a shadow in the back of my mind. And I knew deep down that its story wasn't finished. Not yet.